When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan. Sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Woo! All right, 3:05. We're 3 hours deep. Another two to go until the warm-up show and the culmination of our five-hour midnight ride. Right here on The Fan, 888-808-1019. So, yeah, if you were paying attention today, Giants camp. You know, and heading into it, it's funny because I listened to all the beat writers and read all the stories. And, you know, typically when you have dual practices, when you welcome a team in to practice with you as the Giants did the Lions, and last year they went and practiced with the Lions last year, you expect a little bit of this stuff. It's the first time you're playing another team. It's the first time you're practicing against another team. Some of these chippiness even happens when you're practicing with your own team early on in camp. So you expect some sort of aggression. But what we've seen here at Giant Camp, the amount of fights, the eight different fights, offensive, defensive, everything, you know, I don't know if it speaks to the coach. I don't know if it speaks to anything other than last year and the perception of last year. And I think the coach probably made the team aware of it, and certainly the writers were aware of it. Last year, it was a glaring, and it ended up being like a little bit of a prophecy. They weren't ready to compete with the Lions last year. Right? Last year, when they had this dual practice against the Lions, now the Lions were coming off a frustrating season, but a great end, as they beat the Packers the last game of the year to keep them out of the playoffs, to keep Aaron Rodgers out of the playoffs. They didn't make the playoffs. They had nothing to play for. But they did go into Lambeau, win that game. They were one of the hotter teams down the stretch of that season. And they were coming out and with high expectations for last year upcoming. And at that practice, the Giants were coming off a playoff year, a playoff win on the road. And, you know, they were kind of on equal footing, I would think. I don't think anybody thought the Giants were world beaters, but certainly a playoff team and a good team. And that was the perception of last year's team. And the Lions were this hungry group with Dan Campbell as the head coach, who finished the year hot but fell just short. And the Lions kicked the crap out of the Giants last year. Just kicked the crap out of them. So I think heading into this practice with these two teams, one, everybody expected more of the same. The Lions are a team, you know, made it to the NFC Championship game, expected to get back there at least. One of the better teams in the NFC, one of the well-coached teams in the NFC. A lot of weapons offensively, speed, quarterback who has been much maligned throughout his career and jettisoned after even taking to the Rams to the Super Bowl, but a quarterback that really has reshaped his career in Detroit. But a Lions team that's tough. A Lions team that, you know, gets knocked down and bites your kneecaps on the way up, the whole nine. And I think the Giants were ready for it. And I think that, you know, I don't know if it means anything, because I'm hearing, you know, a bunch of stuff about, hey, like, this is supposed to be a Super Bowl team and the Giants are right there with them. And the Giants were, you know, if I would even say that the Giants got the better of the play on offense compared to the Lions defense, and I saw a lot of good things, and I'm trying to be optimistic about this team, this Giant team, but I don't want to get too excited about practice, because I view it as just last year for those who were still there. I know every year the team's slightly different, but for those who remember it, the Giants came into this practice, got their ass kicked, and knew the Lions were for real. So I think the aggression, I think the fights, I think the scuffles, and I think just the overall toughness from the play, because let's be honest, as they're playing 7-on-7, as they're playing, you know, these practices, if you come out and you hustle and you're determined, like, you can overcome some skill stuff, I would think, in these practices, where you can shine brighter than you might on a real NFL field when it comes down to making big plays for an entire game. If you come out, no one's, you know, they're not going deep into their playbook. This is about just lining up, trying to get open, running usual routes, running base offense stuffs, and ultimately at the line of scrimmage, beat the man in front of you. And if you come out determined, especially early on in these practices, like, I don't want to make too much of it, but at the same time, I am pretty positive on what we've seen in camp and what we've seen in these practices, and I love the Daniel Jones angle, because I got to tell you, I don't know, you know how I feel about Daniel Jones. I went on and on about Daniel Jones yesterday. I think it's nonsense that he's ranked as low as he is, whether it's Madden. I've seen other lists from NFL players, whatever the case may be. He is far too disrespected across this league. This is a guy who has taken a team to the playoffs and won a road playoff game. But at the same time, he's injury prone. I don't think he's that accurate. I don't think he goes through progressions very well. And he doesn't score enough points. Now, the weapons have been what the weapons are, and I'm hoping this year will be different. But I have to think that after this is what, take six on the whole, let's get him an offensive line, some weapons, and see what he can do the year of Daniel Jones. I can't help but think that Joe Shane and Hard Knocks specifically got to Daniel Jones. Because I'm not saying Daniel Jones isn't a tough guy. I'm not saying Daniel Jones isn't a leader on this team, right? He's got the Vanilla Vic moniker from Barkley. I think he is one of the leaders of this team. I think he's done a good job with that. I think they believe in him. I think half the team thought that he got paid when Saquon should have got paid. I think that's been a little bit of an issue. But I think he's a tough kid who has been a fairly decent enough leader. I mean, nobody's been good at anything on this team. They lose too much. But I'll give him whatever credit there is for it. But I think the feistiness, I mean, you in comments defending himself, right? He's in comments about how good he is. And then he gets on a field, and he's right there in the mix for fights. He, from day one, now, I'm sorry, I don't think he would have had to have been on the field day one. He was going to be the starter once they didn't draft a quarterback. I understand he's healthy, and when if you're healthy, you're out there. But, I mean, from day one, he has gotten every single rep. He's coming off an ACL injury in November. November. I honestly think maybe the smartest thing that the New York Giants did was not hide what we all thought they would hide. Myself included. I talked about, hey, what are they really going to show them bad-mouthing Daniel Jones? Are they really going to show how intense they tried to get another quarterback? Are the Giants have final editorial? Are they really going to allow that to happen? And they did. And they showed far more than I thought they would. And they showed, you know, at the combines going across to New England and trying to make a deal. Or whether the morning of the draft, you know, calling the Patriots and saying, hey, listen, just tell me one way or another. I can't go about building my day with this over my head. They did everything they could to move up to get a quarterback and supplant Daniel Jones. They did everything they could. And then he watched it on TV. And he was probably warned about it. And he knew it was coming. And he might have even been told all along throughout the entire process while it was happening during the draft that, hey, we're, you know, it's a possibility. We can get a quarterback. It's nothing to do with you, blah, blah, blah. I think you forget the weapons, which we obviously know, right? Neighbors, no joke, looks great at this practice. Making a toe touch catch that they ruled out of bounds, but it looked like, if you watched it on the replay, that he was in bounds, whatever. You know he's a legitimate, excellent wide receiver, and it's popping off all over the field, and along with the fights, that was kind of a talking point of yesterday's dual practice, that Neighbors is going to be a problem for other teams in the NFL, and hopefully that's the case. And obviously, I like Wendell Robinson and his speed, and his, you know, get him the ball quick and let him make people miss kind of slot receiver role that they think fine if they have him on. And honestly, I think Hyatt is probably the big question mark of this team and the difference between having a hopefully serviceable passing game and having a very impressive passing game. If he is really going to make that next leap, if he's going to utilize his speed as well as some instinctual route running and doing different things, you know, and having good hands and being as productive as he was in college, obviously, then maybe this offense can be something special. But maybe the best thing they did, besides getting him weapons, besides adding Runyon, and besides adding Illuminor and adding other offensive guys and adding Van Roten at the tail end of camp here, which is where the fight started from, and that's who Daniel Jones was defending. Despite giving him weapons and despite giving him offensive linemen and trying to help him overall and bring a pass rusher and help him by helping with his defense and everything else, whatever you could have done to help Daniel Jones, maybe, just maybe, giving him the extra motivation of, hey, we're done with you. I don't care about the contract. I don't care about this. You're not healthy and you don't score touchdowns, and we're looking to move on. And to have it as out in the open now, maybe that was something that Daniel Jones needed. And maybe that provided a spark. And yeah, I get that, hey, he's been injured. You don't want to mess around. Don't get involved in this stuff. You're the quarterback. You're wearing a red shirt for a reason. Don't get involved in the melees. Don't get involved in this stuff. You saw even Brian Burns say, hey, that's great, but we don't need you in there. No, I think this is exact. And if he gets hurt, he gets hurt. Let's be honest. They were halfway to a new quarterback anyway. I like Daniel Jones. I hope he doesn't get hurt. I hope I'm wrong about him, and he's the quarterback for the next 10 years. I genuinely do. But he needs to just go out there and play with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I know the year that he had to prove, the only year he's been successful and the only winning the Giants have ever done is when Daniel Jones had to prove himself. They didn't pick up his fifth-year option. He was going to be a free agent. He had 1 year to we talked a lot about playing on free agent years in the course of the show, but he had 1 year where he had to prove himself, and he did. And I'm not saying he doesn't care or that's what he needs to be motivated, but maybe it's helped. And whether it's the beard, whether it's getting involved in the fighting, whether it's, not having a great start to his camp, but looking better in this game against Detroit, or practice, should I say, against Detroit, whatever the case may be, I'm really starting to think that Hard Knocks and the openness and the level of just, hey, this is business and this is how we have to go about it, really spoke to Daniel Jones and hopefully this offense and this team about, hey, listen, we're in rebuild mode and we're taking note. And if you're not good enough, we'll move on. But that's the Daniel Jones element of it, which I love. The other element of it, this team decided that they got their ass kicked last year, and they didn't want to get their ass kicked this year. And they showed up to play one of the better teams in the NFL, and they didn't give an inch. And I still don't know what it means for the team. I'm not riding high off of one practice. I feel like a lot of Giant fans, got the enthusiasm of it. I know I like watching the talking Giant guys. I got to get them on at one point. I'll try to get them on here. I think the talking Giant guys on John Boy do a great job. They were really pumped. I know Sean, watching him come in here and starting the show yesterday in the afternoon drive with Tiki, was pumped about the surprise practice. I saw, everywhere, every reporter saying, hey, I expected the Giants to get their ass kicked, and the Giants showed up, and, Burns was living in the backfield, which hopefully is a positive, and that can continue. And, hey, you know what? The offense probably got the better of the Lions' defense more than not, and it was impressive, and that's fine, and I'm on it. But I care more about I don't care about that because it's a practice, and I'm not sure that talent level is something that dominates in these practices. I mean, yes, okay, the great player, sure. Neighbors goes out there and dominates, fine. But when you're talking about just in the trenches, you're talking about running base plays, you're talking about one team showed up knowing last year they got their ass kicked and it wasn't going to happen again. Does it mean they're better than the Lions? I don't know. Does it mean they're right there with the Lions? I don't think so. I don't think that that's one practice proves necessarily, and I don't want to get riding too high. But what it does tell you is this coach and this team doesn't like getting their ass kicked. And last year, at this time, they got their ass kicked. And it led into what? It led into the beginning of the season getting their asses kicked. It led to 40-0 against Dallas. So what I will say is the team's added some talent. The wide receiving core looks as good as it's ever looked, if not the best it's looked with Daniel Jones for sure. The defensive front is damn good, and hopefully Burns is what he was, if not better than what he was in Carolina, and getting after a quarterback in this Bowen defense. Hopefully him and Thibodeau can create that kind of healthy competition that could get them both in the defensive backfield. You know how good Dexter Lawrence is. The offensive line should be a hell of a lot better. We're still waiting on Evan Neal if that ever is going to happen. But, I mean, you're talking about a shored up middle of the line, the interior of the line. You got one of the best left tackles in the sport, and you got an angry Daniel Jones who's out there looking to fight, who's out there looking to get back immediately and not ease his way into camp, who's already clamoring to start and play snaps in the first preseason game on Thursday. And I think a lot of it has to do, at least with Daniel Jones, with that, with Hard Knocks and openly telling the world, yeah, we were ready to move on from you. And he knows his contract situation. He knows his injury situation. He knows he can't get injured. He knows they have to get out of the gate on fire to play. Because that's the other underlying thing of this is we all say, oh, Daniel Jones gets the year. Daniel Jones does not get the year. Daniel Jones gets half the year. And if there isn't winning being done and they look the same they have over the last, you know, 5 of the last 6 years, Daniel Jones is not going to get an opportunity to finish this season because they're not going to let him get hurt and guarantee that contract. This Giant team is under more pressure. This quarterback is under more pressure to get this season started in the exact opposite of how last season started than you can possibly imagine. Daniel Jones knows he needs to perform right away. That's why he's in camp. That's why he's feisty. And this team knows they need to win, and the start of these seasons have crippled this team. The start of these seasons have ruined these seasons, and it's time for this team that has added some pieces, that has fixed this offensive line a bit, and has a couple of guys who can get after the quarterback to show up. And step one was showing up against the team that kicked their ass last year in this dual practice. And they did it. And they showed up and they fought and they made sure that the Lions didn't walk away from these 2 days the same way they did last year, thinking, hey, we just kicked the tar out of the New York Giants. And hopefully that's the beginning of what can be a positive season for the New York Giants. I'm starting to come around on it a little bit. I still have no faith in the quarterback to stay healthy or to perform. I'm still worried about the defensive corner, the defensive backfield, which again, Flott got beat for a touchdown. And, you know, besides Banks, they don't really have a cornerback. Inexperienced cornerbacks get beat. That's just plain and simple. That's how the NFL works. So there's still a lot of question marks about this team. But for this first day, I love the attitude that Daniel Jones has taken to camp from day one. And I love the idea that they knew that the Lions walked all over him last year and it wasn't going to be the same this year. And it led to fights because I think the Lions were expecting it to be the same. Not only was I expecting it to be the same, not only were most of the beat writers expecting it to be the same, but it feels like the Lions were expecting it to be the same. And when the Giants gave pushback, and they did, it led to a little bit of brouhahas, as a word I haven't heard in a while from the great Pat Boyle. So hopefully this Giants season could be a little bit better than I had previous expectations for, but I'm not going crazy off of one practice. I'll just say this. The Giants decided yesterday they weren't going to get their ass kicked. We'll see how they show up today. And we'll see if this, you know, passing attack that has legitimate three good options, including one of the most talented wide receivers in the game. And that's, you know, I think it's probably premature to say that, but we understand how dynamic Neighbors can be. This passing game needs to be a hell of a lot better. This offense needs to be a hell of a lot better. This offensive line needs to be a hell of a lot better. And day one, check the box. 322, McMonagle here with you. So we'll open it up to Giant calls. We can talk about the Jets too. And they're still waiting on Reddick. It's almost $1 million in fines he's paid so far this year. The season is rapidly approaching. How much play will Aaron Rodgers get in the preseason? And do you trust this head coach? Those are really the question marks around the Jets.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Manny calling signal, takes the snap, looks left, pops it up, first wide open, touchdown Giants, and the left corner of the end zone.
Touchdown.
With 35 seconds to go, the Giants regain the lead.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And yeah, you know, for Daniel Jones to have a weapon like this, let's be fair. I mean, as much as I've been down on him, he hasn't had anything close to this. I mean, is I heard Sean say Golden Tate is the best wide receiver he's had. I'm trying to think if that's accurate. I mean, I guess. It has not been a bunch of great wide receivers playing for the New York Giants recently since Odell left. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think you could say Shepard at times was his, I mean, with the Giants at least. Yeah, no, Golden Tate had a better career and better moments. You go, that Kenny Golladay had better career and better moments, but not as a Giant, clearly. But that's part of it, too. You know, like, I don't want to, I'm trying to be positive, Daniel Jones, just for today and yesterday, because I thought some of the lists, and now he's played well in camp, and I'm trying to come to the idea that as the season gets closer, I actually want him to perform well. I'm trying to think of some of the ways, but like, you know, you got the tight end who does, you know, Evan Engram can't do anything with the Giants. I understand he's dropping balls. That's on him. Daniel Jones put one right in the bucket for him against the Eagles that would have won the game and he dropped it. But he goes with Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville and he thrives. He's like one of the only tight ends in history to have 110 receptions. He's been great for the Jags. Like, it's not just, hey, he doesn't have any weapons. Like, oh, Golden Tate came here, he wasn't successful. You know, this one came here, wasn't successful. Oh, this one, like, part of it is the Giants and him and the offensive line and all of it didn't help make their wide receivers successful. But right now, I'm really interested in Hyatt. Hyatt is the game changer for me and this offense. We know what the running game is going to be, or at least we know what the running back is going to be. It's going to be a matter of can they block for him. Right? He's not a game-changing. Singletary isn't a game-changing running back. He's not Saquon Barkley. He's not, you know, McCaffrey. He's not someone who's going to, you know, he needs the block. He can run. If you could block for him, he'll be fine. The running game should be fine. We saw this. Like, you know, Willie Gault ran the ball fine while Saquon Barkley was injured that year. I mean, you can run the ball. You could have a run game. I'm not worried about it necessarily. There's not a game-breaking player from that position, but they should have a run game. I'm not so worried as long as they can block. The passing game, I get. Neighbors is brilliant, right? Neighbors is one of the more talented wide receivers in the game right now. We'll see, right? He's jumping off the page of camp. Everybody loves him. We saw what he did in college. And typically these can't-miss wide receiver prospects are as close to can't miss as you can get. I would think that proves to be the one position that for the most part, there's always busts here and there, and there's underachievers even if not busts. But for the most part, if you get a dynamic number one wide receiver, he typically is some facsimile of that. But to me, it's Hyatt. To me, it's what is, because I know how good he's going to be, Neighbors, and I know what, you know, Wandell Robinson brings to the table. But what is Hyatt? Because last year, Hyatt was able to get down the field. Tyrod Taylor hit him a couple times. But really, Daniel Jones couldn't connect with him. The offensive line and, you know, their inability to block made it very difficult for a guy who only tries to get down the field. What kind of element does Hyatt bring to this? Now, a lot of people, the talk is he's really made a big jump from year one to year two. Hopefully he's able to do different things, run some different routes. I know that's been his bugaboo. I know that's what they, you know, talk about when it comes to him. He can get down the field, but his route running is inconsistent, and he can't run the entire tree. If he is going to be a legitimate number two wide receiver, and you have those two guys on the outside with Wandell Robinson and Bellinger, or whoever else, you know, maybe get a tight end next year too, but like that could be a dynamic passing attack if Daniel Jones is capable of it. And that's why I'm almost eager to see this, because Neighbors really is the final thing, right? They need a tight end. They got Waller. They need this. They need that. They need a tall wide receiver. They got Kenny Golladay. And I'm not saying those are Daniel Jones' fault why Kenny Golladay didn't work or this one didn't work. I'm not saying that. But, you know, it's been the never-ending, well, he just needs this. He just needs that. He needs a number one. Well, here is a number one. And I'm looking forward to it because this has got to be the final year, whatever it is, good, bad, whatever. It's got to be the final year of Daniel Jones. And as I'm hearing all this different talk from these practices, and yeah, Daniel Jones got off to a bad start, right? The beginning of his camp was terrible. You heard about all, you know, you saw the highlights, right? You saw the overthrows, even on screen passes. He struggled out of the gate. I would expect it on some level. He's got to be rusty. He's rushed back incredibly quickly. I don't think, I thought he had a good chance to play week one. I never thought he'd be here from every day of camp, you know, no relegation to him at all, playing every single snap with the first team. I did not see that coming. So he's got back immediately, but that's going to come with some rust. But I am very curious to see what Jalin Hyatt can be. Because if he is someone special, or even remotely special, or just a nice complimentary second wideout to Neighbors, with Wandell Robinson, you might be able to have a legitimate passing attack if you give Daniel Jones time. And we've been dying to see it. Dying to see it. Need some offense. They went, how long was it, 11, 12 games 2 years ago or 3 years ago without throwing a touchdown to a wide receiver? That's crazy. This is the NFL. This is the NFL in 2024. You throw touchdown passes. Everyone throws touchdown passes. It's time the Giants get in the act. So when you talk about this new passing attack and these three wide receivers, and Slayton, let's not forget Slayton, who, you know, I'm glad is in the position he's in because I don't deem him being number one wide receiver. I got a tweet about this too. Someone like, don't sleep on Slayton. He's finally not going to be guarded by the number one corner. I'm like, I don't even know if he's going to be, like, I don't know what Slayton is, but undoubtedly every year he ends up with the most receiving yards on the Giants. It's remarkable. He does have big play ability. But let's be honest. If he's your best wide receiver, it's an awful passing game. It's an awful passing game. If he's your second best wide receiver, it's probably not a good passing game. So, yeah, he's there too. But you add this wide receiver core to the play calling of Brian Daboll and hopefully the chance taken. And they've worked on, you know, going deep and, you know, getting the ball down the field, which they desperately need to do. But I'm looking forward to Brian Daboll calling the plays. And I'm looking forward to Daniel Jones having some weapons and seeing if I'm wrong and seeing if it you know, if he's capable of doing this. Because Neighbors, Hyatt, Wandell Robinson, it sounds like it could be a talented wide receiver group. And they have not come anywhere near that in the Daniel Jones era. And so I'm impressed with, you know, listen, we all liked, hey, they're ready to fight. Football's a physical game. Can't take the physical nature out of football. They're trying to, and all this crap, all this, you know, the new kickoff rules, all this crap trying to take the, might as well put a quarterback in a dress, all that nonsense. But I don't care about the fisticuffs. I don't care about the fight. I'm glad they showed up. I'm glad they showed up to fight. I'm glad they didn't take the Lions lightly, and I'm glad they recognized last year they got their ass kicked and they didn't want to do that again. And maybe that was part of the reason they led to such a poor start last year, was they weren't ready from Jump Street. And that's why the Dallas Cowboys came in and kicked the tar out of them 40-0. That excites me. I feel good about that. But that doesn't make me feel like this team can be a winning team. Not that alone. What does make me feel better about the chances of actually winning some games is the idea that Daniel Jones and this passing attack might actually have something to it. And if they have the great wide receiver and they have two other legitimate options and they can block for Daniel Jones, we're going to find out if he can make decisions. We're going to find out if just being able to throw the ball up to Neighbors and have him come down with it is going to be good enough to help this offense. Something from the passing game. And that's why I know maybe I'm blowing it out of proportion, but it's been a barren wasteland, the passing game. Like, that's why I talk about Daniel Jones, because there's been no passing game. It's non-existent. And we're going to find out if it's just the weapons, because right now, I mean, that's not a bad wide receiving core if Hyatt is what he is. Now, we got to find out. Games have to be played. But so far, it feels like that wide receiving trio is something that actually could at least provide a spark to this Giant passing.
Stuck in traffic and need to vent? Dial the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
So, you know, I've said for a while the Jets need to win. Not only, you know, to win and to provide their fans with some much-needed enjoyment out of a Jet season and just to be a winning franchise, but also to get out from under the black cloud that surrounds the organization that every move they make, anything doesn't go exactly according to plan or anything happens, someone says something, anything goes wrong, the Jets are at fault. And the Jets are the laughingstock and the, oh, LOL Jets. And how could they do this? How could they think this was a smart move? How stupid could they be? Blah, 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 blah. They need to get out from that. That's what losing teams get. Everything they do is under a microscope, or everything they do, fans, media, are looking to get them because this is all part of why they lose, right? It's all part of why they lose. That's the perception. And I always use the example of like all the different things going on with Kansas City. Well, let me ask you a question, right? If the New York Jets decided to go out and give their kicker, who made comments that infuriated at least half the population, in Harrison Butker, if they went out and paid him the largest contract any kicker has gotten in NFL history, and then they followed that up with having John Gruden, who we all know his emails that were made public and the nature of those emails, if they allowed him to be on the field for practice in, you know, jet green, what do you think the take would be? What do you think the reaction around Jets land would be if they, you know, gave that kicker the biggest contract ever and then had John Gruden on the field with them for practice? Whatever you think about it, right? Forget whether you think Kansas City should or shouldn't have done it. It doesn't matter. That's not the point of the conversation. Point is, what if the Jets did it? What if the Jets had John Gruden in green, in Jets gear, on the field practicing? You think the Jets would get the benefit of that? You think it would be the minimal talking point that it is out in Kansas City? Kansas City wins. Kansas City has Andy Reid. Kansas City has Patrick Mahomes, who should have been the best-ranked player in the NFL. And I feel like I didn't yell enough about that yesterday. Because I went home and I was thinking to myself, I'm like, there's a whole group of NFL players who believe Lamar Jackson's better than Patrick Mahomes. Like, I couldn't wrap my mind around it. We were walking out. I saw Beningo. Me and Fleegs were walking out. We saw Joe, and we're like, that was the thing that came up. And we, you know, win something, Lamar. Can you win something first? Huh? And he's right. But they have Patrick Mahomes. They have won Super Bowls. They have been to how many consecutive AFC championship games? So they can have John Gruden on the field. That's why the Jets need to win. That's why they need to figure out this Hassan Reddick thing. They need to get him in camp. It's damn near $1 million now he's cost himself. They have to figure this out and get him ready. And I know Coach Salah said, hey, you don't know if he needs to. We've seen other defensive guys. I remember, not even for disciplinary reasons or holdout purposes, but like Michael Strahan barely played his final year, barely showed up at camp and played relatively well, helped win a Super Bowl. Chris Jones laid into camp last year. He was just fine. We've seen defensive players, certainly ones that are veterans and, you know, dominant, certainly a dominant edge rusher. I don't think he's someone who has to be in at camp. Sometimes defensive coordinators get too cute. He's on the field, pin your ears back, go get the quarterback. So as long as he's in shape, is it that big a deal he's not there for the team, for the winning purposes, as long as he's there week one? I don't know. My gut tells me no, as long as he's there week one. But how long are they going to let this thing play out? I would just get him in as soon as possible. But it seems like they're playing hardball, and we'll see what happens. And we'll see how much preseason football Aaron Rodgers plays. And this is an easy one to me. Like, I don't get hung up on this stuff. For me, it's Aaron Rodgers' decision. If I were the Jets, I wouldn't hold him back. If I were the, you know, I'd suggest things, but it's how he feels about his body. Daniel Jones wants to play. Daniel Jones is coming off a blown out knee. And I think they're going to let him play the first game because he needs to play. Aaron Rodgers needs to play. But if he doesn't think he needs to, then that's on him. I think that, you know, he's a veteran. He understands the offense enough. It's not a big deal if he doesn't play, and it's up to him on whether he wants to or not. We get hung up on that kind of nonsense. But Those are the two New York teams. And obviously there's some news out there. Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers, very talented player. Someone I thought I was hoping before the Giants drafted, obviously neighbors, was considering that this would be a deal for the Giants. But apparently the San Francisco 49ers, who have enough talent, they don't need Brandon Ayuk. Not going to be able to keep him probably. Have now in the works, have framing for two separate trades. So they've already come up with the trades. They would be willing to trade Brandon Ayuk to the New England Patriots, trade is already in place, or the Cleveland Browns, trade is already in place. And just like the scenario with Tariq Hill a few years ago when he had a trade to Miami or the Jets, he's going to have to pick on whether he or not he wants to leave. Now, New England feels like a barren wasteland to me right now. The last thing I'd want to do, like if you think about it, can you imagine? I don't want to be a part of the post-Tom Brady New England era. Like, I'm going to go to New England and be miserable. The whole point of going to England was to win all those years. Now I got to go there and be one of the a part of one of the worst teams in the NFL. That's the last place I would want to go. Now they got Brissett there. I know they drafted May. He's had an up and down camp at best. He's been relatively disappointing at camp, but I wouldn't get too hung up on that. You got a young quarterback there, but Cleveland has been a winning program, believe it or not. Had a good year last year. Flacco comes in, leads them to the playoffs. They had a disastrous playoff performance against Houston. But that's a pretty good team. And you got Watson, who's coming back. Hope, see if he can have a chip on his shoulder to get back to what he was prior to everything that went down with him. But that's an interesting decision. And ultimately, I don't know if he's going to... Like, I would think that's an easy one. If I got to go to either Cleveland or New England, and I look at the situations and I see the defense Cleveland, I mean, last year's Cleveland's defense, the best defense in the NFL last year was Cleveland at home. They didn't travel as well, still had a top defense, but Cleveland in their building, that was the best defense, that was the best unit in football, Cleveland in their building. So, I mean, you're going there with some weapons. You're going there with a built-in defense. You're going there with a quarterback who at one time, not that long ago, and still a young man, was a top-five quarterback in the NFL, where he's walking off the field and J.J. Watt is apologizing for not giving him a better chance to win. I mean, I would think those two conversations are easy, but it's been a weird... Like, it almost feels like Ayuk would be the kind of guy just to stick it to them and say, I'm not going anywhere. I don't want to go to Cleveland. I don't want to go to New England. Trade me somewhere I want to go. So it's going to be an interesting situation there, but a very talented guy, someone who's going to possibly be off a 49ers roster that's just loaded and has been as well put together a team as the NFL has seen over the last handful of years. So we'll see how that situation fixes itself, but that should be interesting for fantasy football fans. We got to start to talk about fantasy football because now I love my brother-in-law. I do. He's a good enough guy. Sometimes he listens to me. Maybe he's listening to me right now, Jim. I just want to tell you, until the league is ready, until you actually want to do this thing, don't just willy-nilly throw out the idea of some sort of father-son fantasy football league. Because I'm in. Don't get me wrong. I'm in. I love telling him, but it's all he talks about right now, and I don't have any answers for him. You didn't say, here's the league. You didn't say, this is what we're doing. You didn't say anything other than, hey, maybe like we could all get together and do some sort of like, father-son thing. I'll talk to some people. Okay, great. Haven't heard another word about it, Jimmy. Not another word. And every day I get questions. Every day I get, when's the draft? When's the draft, Jim? Huh? When's the draft? I don't know. What should I tell him, Jim? Because he asked me 35 times a day. 35 times a day. He kicks the door in while I'm on the crapper. When's the draft, Dad? I don't know. Ask Uncle Jimmy and his big mouth. Okay? So the next time you want to say something stupid like that, Jim, you make sure you have all the answers necessary. I'm in. Sign me up. Tell me when and where. Tell me who else is in. Because I can't just open-ended have this that he doesn't stop, Jim. Okay? So now I've got another. I had to cancel one of my leagues. I feel bad. I texted my buddy. I had to talk to my buddy Troy. I've been in that league for a while, but I just can't do. I can't do six, seven fantasy leagues. And now apparently, I guess I might not be doing one, but apparently I'm doing a father-son league, which sounds great. Sounds like a lot of fun. Get him into football. Watch football together. Watch Brandon Ayuk catch touchdowns for the Cleveland Browns. But I need to know, because one thing I've learned about seven-year-olds, particularly mine, you can't just like say things. Like 2 days, we went to the game on Saturday, the Yankee game, and I casually said, you know, we don't do anything, just me and you. Like, maybe just me and you, and then I'll take your brother to a game. But maybe just me and you go to a game one day before the summer ends. And then I just said, and you know what? Maybe we'll go to a night game, and you can come with me to the office. I was half joking. You can come and sit and sleep on one of you can sleep with LaPresti in a back couch or something while I do the show. And now we won't stop. When am I going to your office? When are we going to the game? When are we going? I'm like, buddy, I said that. In the moment of, like, I was getting you ice cream, and it came out of my mouth, but I really wasn't serious, man. I don't know. How you going to sleep here at 2 o'clock in the morning? I said something stupid. I'm sorry. But that's it. I shouldn't open my mouth. Now it's, when are we going to the game? Just me and you, and going back to your office. When are we going to the game? I want to see the studios. Blah, blah, blah. Well, you've been there already. I know, but I want to see it at night when you work. I'm like, it's really not that exciting. No one's here. It's me and Fliegelman. I'll send you a picture. Fleeg's in a Jet hat and a Taylor Swift shirt. That's it. That's what we got. That's what you get when you open up your mouth. Just like Pete Alonso making dumb comments before the show. Oh, you see that transition? Look at how I did that. Pete Alonso making dumb comments before the game in St. Louis. Focused on his home runs. Focused on his all-star appearance. Not focused on the Mets and winning. Focused on keeping that value up for free agency.